Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. For those that may not be familiar, SDHAM is the morning show attached to the soccer down here, the SDH Network. And it is those of us at SDH that get to carry you through the entire day, get you started with your morning, and let you know what to anticipate, what you might have missed overnight, and get you ready for all the stories and some of the things that you might have missed as you're getting ready Monday through Friday on the SDH Network. And you can follow along on the morning show on all of SDH Network social media. You can watch it live on our YouTube channel, on Twitch, and on X. You can also, later on in the afternoon, you can catch it in audio form on your favorite podcatcher, Spreaker, and SoccerDownHere.net. Touring this week, we're going to spend a lot of time involving Major League Soccer, and it's going to be a tour to MLS Studios to catch up with a coach who is now on the other side of the desk. It is going to be a tour to Seattle because there have been some names that have been mentioned, with the transfer window still having a little space to it, that might be leaving Seattle, and there might be some interest in the Southeast. Our buddy Nico Moreno will be catching up with us there from Pulso Sports and Sounder at Heart. And then we're going to wrap up with a really cool story. It is one of the leagues that is having a championship match this weekend, the NPSL. And we get to catch up with the head coach of a club that's going back-to-back, or at least trying to, in Santiago Lopez and El Farolito, based in the Bay Area. You might know their story from Open Cup runs and other cup championships and the 2024 NPSL title. And now we'll find out what it's like for them to try to go back-to-back here in 2025. But as promised, first guest out of the blocks for this. We go to MLS's studios, and we get to catch up with a coach that Atlanta fans know very well from his time in Portland. Now he is on the desk at Apple TV Plus and MLS Season Pass. We find out what geo time is like this season for Apple TV as he watches MLS from a different perspective. Here's our conversation with Gio Savarese from Apple TV and as he gets to watch MLS. All right, we get to catch up with one of the busiest men around. And he is for his first time here on the morning show. And we'll find out where his parts unknown are and where he's hanging out with us. One of the coolest coaches out there who has had to deal with a lot of different things in a lot of different places, and now he gets to do geo time on Apple TV. He is getting properly hydrated. He's got his, I'm guessing it's coffee, might be tea, I don't know. But we're going to catch up with Gio Savarese and find out what in the wide world of sports is going on. Welcome to the morning show, Gio.
It is a pleasure to be in the show. Thank you for the invite.
All right, so let me ask. We've had Ozzy Alonso on in the past. We've had Dax. We've had BWP, among others. What is it like for you to be on this side of the desk instead of having folks sticking microphones in your face and asking you questions that you've heard 19,000 times that you got to come up with 18,000 different answers for?
That's such a good question because I've had the fortune, to be a little bit in every side as a coach, sporting director, as an analyst, as I'm doing right now. So it's definitely, each one is different, but all of them have the same core values and the same idea of, you know, speaking about the game. Now from this side, there's a lot more that I have to investigate. Because we have to speak, so I have a higher respect for all of you. And definitely something that has allowed me to grow even more. When you coach, you're more focused about your team, your game, your season. You're deeper in that. But now as an analyst, especially, you know, what we do, I have to know about every game, every player, every situation. So, you know, you guys are amazing.
Well, it's great to have you on this side of the table because, you know, when we have been asking questions, whether it was in Major League Soccer or in the North American Soccer League, when you would be making your tours, tremendous, profound respect for what you've been able to do as a coach. You mentioned all of the research. Who is on your speed dial? I ask this of coaches when it comes to when coaches have questions about what they're doing. Now, as a TV studio analyst, who is on your speed dial when you've got a question about being a TV studio analyst? Who do you call and go like, what am I doing here?
That's great. First of all, you know, I see how well everybody that works around me, you know, in the research that they do is amazing. We're lucky because Apple TV provides different people that we can, you know, just call them right away, email them, and whatever question you have it right there in seconds. So that's something definitely that wish I had as a coach, you know, that if I wanted a goal scorer to score a goal right away, that I can get that in seconds. But, you know, we're fortunate enough to be able to have that information. And then if you want to go deeper, you know, I'm fortunate to have so many friends in the game. So if I have a specific question to ask, I can go directly to a coach, to a player, to a person in a club. And just provide the information that, you know, that I'm looking for.
I just have this vision of you with you. I don't know if you're an iPhone or an Android guy, but I just have this vision with you on the desk and you're sitting there going, okay, so who do I go on the Rolodex to ask this question? Live on the air and getting those instant kinds of responses. Obviously, since we are based in Atlanta, we are a national show, but based in Atlanta, I do want to ask you about what you have seen or maybe haven't seen from Atlanta United this year and what your thoughts are as we are at this particular point of the season at the All-Star break and Atlanta United is where they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I probably have seen the same thing that everybody has seen. A team that has invested a lot this season, a team that when we were looking at what was going on in the club at the beginning of the season, we had high expectations for the team. I mean, personally, I had them winning the Supporters' Shield, I think, because of the amount of players, the quality players that were coming in, and for the momentum that they had last year getting into the playoff. So definitely disappointed in what I have seen so far, because even though there is, I think, a good group of players, they've been very inconsistent. There's been moments in which you have seen, especially and more at home, some half, like the last half that they play, can't remember right now against who, I gotta look into it. But the first half that they played at home, it was a very good half.
Yeah.
But everything changed in the second half for them, and they've been this consistent team, which I don't think for the quality of the players that they have, you know, we should be looking at. And knowing about the organization, Atlanta as a history, and if it's, there's someone that can talk about that history, it's me, because, you know, I wish I had an MLS Cup in my side and not in your side. You guys have always been, you know, a quality organization. With a fan base that is amazing, a beautiful stadium, always, you know, breaking through, trying to make sure that things are always at a high level. So it's been, I think, a little disappointing to see the team being so inconsistent this year.
When you have a team that is minus 15 in minute 46 to minute 60, they've only scored three, they've given up 18 when they come out of the locker room. How, I mean, it is one of the things that has completely and totally confounded and confused folks this year, where you go into the locker room, coach has conversations, players are getting locked in for the second half, and then you just have moment after moment where goals are being scored. How have you in the past had conversations to make sure that folks lock in that first 5, 10, 15 minutes in the second half so they can continue that momentum into the latter stages of the second half?
Yeah, I think it goes further back more than just a conversation in halftime. I think it starts first with a team that needs to have chemistry, first of all. I need, you know, a team that sometimes can go on bad and good moments, but that the players around trust each other or are willing to play for each other. And then the coach at a particular time, and I'm talking about my experience, you need to be able to connect with the players, and there has to be a relationship between the players and between the coach and players, that when you have a speech at halftime or if you have to adjust something, there's a belief and there's a willingness to go into the second half and trust your teammate, trust your coach and say, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to compete, and let's go and try to do it in the second half. It might not work out, but there needs to be that before anything, before tactics, before, you know, the group goes into the field. If there's no chemistry, I think it always becomes more difficult to be able to achieve what you're looking for.
And it is not something, I wouldn't think that chemistry among 11 individuals, if not 20, it's not an instant thing, but is it one of the biggest challenges for a coach, especially now at the midpoint of a season when you're in a transfer window where you've got outs and ins and everything? Is creating and building chemistry one of the biggest challenges for a coach?
I think that's the biggest challenge that a coach has when you're coaching. It's not the tactics, it's not the... the staff, you know, knowing what to do and in the hours that you put in. It is the most important thing is the connection, the belief, the group desire to be able to say, we're going to fight together. And then, you know, fight the way the coach is looking to for us to play or how much freedom the coach gives to the players for them to be able to execute. Everything is secondary after the chemistry, after the trust in the group. And I do, and I have seen in some of the games in which some moments the team, I don't want to say gives up, but goes through moments that they don't look the same as they looked 10 minutes before. And that's common in soccer. You know, I had sometimes teams that were inconsistent as well, that sometimes first half was good, second half wasn't good. But there was always the connection, the trust in each other, and the desire to play for each other, even that I think this is the most important word, the sacrifice from the players to say, we will do this as long as we win. And I believe that I haven't seen constantly or a higher percentage Atlanta doing that this season.
Gio Savarese having our own version of Geo Time here on SDHAM here on a Friday and breaking everything down as only he can. Leagues Cup. Last night we started, we got our Leagues Cup after dark. We got our wish. 7 goals in one match with LA Galaxy and Cholos. And then Seattle just decided to take Cruz Azul and show them the door and close the door behind them and make a really loud noise, putting 7 on the board. Were you up late night watching all that stuff?
I watch every game. I just love to, you know, the game, and, you know, I do it for work now, but, you know, it's just the passion, and especially, you know, this is a great competition, League Cup between the Liga MX and the MLS, you know, teams is getting better and better. I think this format is even better. And last night we got a little bit more MLS, you know, better results, especially the one that you mentioned. Seattle was... amazing yesterday. They just came into this field and just took over. I mean, they were dominant. They were very good. They were aggressive. Love it because they done it with a lot of academy players. And that's, you know, great because if you see Cruz Azul, the investment of Cruz Azul in players and the investment in Seattle is probably 4 times the difference. But on the field, you saw Seattle that, I mean, they were, you know, full of energy. And then scoring 7 goals on 45 minutes in second half, you don't see that often. You don't see, especially the 7th goal was a jewel. It was, and people, you know, I heard people saying, did he mean to do that? Yes, he did. They did because he poofed the body. De La Vega turns around, times the perfect, connects in a good way, executed perfectly. Does it happen a lot of times? No. I can tell you from, you know, past history, it's not an easy thing, but sometimes things really come together, and that moment was a special moment for Seattle, for us to watch that goal, and especially for De La Vega.
All right, so when was the last time you had a moment like that where you get this ball service to you perfectly and you just sit there and you smash it right on the full volley? When was the last time you had a moment like that?
I will say a couple of times in my pickups game here, you know, when I go on Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning to play with my friends 11v11, I had a few moments that I said, wow, I mean, you know, what I thought maybe happened, I didn't think it would be so. But, you know, when I was a player, It's one thing that it's not always, but when it happens, you're capable of doing great things. And at that moment, we saw greatness, one of the best goals we're ever going to see.
So does Egan drive you crazy doing Sunday morning pickup? What's it like out there at Sunday morning pickup? We need the dirt.
Kevin is, you know, it's amazing. The whole group it's a family. It's a family, you know, and every family, everybody, you know, is different. Everybody has their personality, but I think, you know, we everybody's having so much fun together. From the time that we arrive, from the moments that we work, everybody, you can see how much they love, even the new ones, Aussie, Dax, you know, Sasha's done it a little bit longer, but Aussie and Dax that are, you know, newcomers, they just, you know, they look like they jump into the roller skates going and they never stop. They're doing so well. I'm very proud of them. And it's a pleasure to have, you know, this family working together.
Gio Savarese on roller skates for Apple TV on Studio. All right. So we're in a transfer window right now, in the secondary transfer window, and we have seen the big announcements. We'll go ahead and mention Messi and friends down in Fort Lauderdale, where Rodrigo De Paul is now a part of it. Looks like he got a haircut and he's ready to go. When it comes to all of the big names that are wanting to play with Leo Messi, and the fans are sitting there and they're wondering how all of the financials work and everything, when you see all of these big names come to Major League Soccer and want to be a part of MLS 2.5, 3.0, what does it mean for you, for someone who has seen the league grow to where it is right now, to see big names still come back and want to be a part of this?
You're talking to someone, as you mentioned, that knows the league from 1996. Actually, I went to the Combine in 1995. So you can, you know, imagine I've seen the league from beginning to end, and looking at this league now, the growth in so many ways is been amazing. It's been something to be proud of. And we want teams to be like Miami, that they push the envelope. We want teams to be like Atlanta, that you push the envelope. You know, you have to make sure that you always want to be elite. You want to be a club that is fighting for, you know, for trophies, and they do it in a way that they bring, you know, always better players to compete. And they have to challenge, you know, MLS to make sure that we keep growing more and more, and that we're not too, you know, too slow in wanting to, you know, increment little by little. We have to push it, but we balance. That's why we have grown so much. Credit to the commissioner. I think Don has done a phenomenal job to be able to be smart in every step that he's done. But it's good as well from teams to push the envelope, as I said before, like Inter Miami, bringing somebody like De Paul. I think, you know, it makes the team better because he's young. He could have been in Europe still. He could have gone to South America. He, you know, decided to go to play with his friend. And Messi, just doesn't matter how old you are around him, he's going to push you. He's going to push you. He's the winner. He doesn't care. He's going to tell you right in your face if you don't do things the right way. But that's the competitive person that he is in. And we want to see that. We have, you know, the best player in the world in our league. And it's good that he keep on pushing, you know, every envelope around himself.
All right. So are you in studio tonight?
I will be, yes.
All right. So are you in studio for the entire weekend, sir?
Correct, I will be.
All right. So what is the rest of your day after you're finished talking with us? When do you have to report in for makeup?
So we'll get together around 2:30. You know, for me, anything in the face. So, you know, not too much changes. So no, the makeup, you know, not that much. And we'll get there. We get a meeting. We talk about exactly in details everything that we're going to cover. We have been preparing, you know, already from these days to have all the information. If we need something, we have people there that will give it to us right away. And then it's, you know, let's go to play and to get to work.
And it's always fantastic to see your work and have Geo time on the rather large 55-inch screen off to my left. But it is also, we are blessed to have you here on the morning show. You now have the garage door opener. You know where the key is under the mat. You can click on that anytime. 10 to 11, traditionally, the last hour of the week is when we just kind of turn it into chaos. Anybody who wants to come and visit, say their piece, 3 minutes, drift in, drift out, I'm done, I'm going to go get my coffee. You now, sir, have golden ticket status. You can come in at any time. It'll be great to see you. If you're ever bored, come on in and visit us anytime.
I appreciate to be in the status now, and definitely, I will be available anytime that you feel that, we need to connect. So it was always a pleasure. And love your show.
I'm going to quote. Let's see. Gio says anytime he wants to come in. I'm writing this down. It's a direct quote.
Perfect. I like it.
go get your second cup. We'll see you soon. And good luck this weekend in Gio time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Take care. All right.
As always, great to catch up with our friends at the network, and Gio, looking forward to future visits with Gio as he finds out what it's like for those of us to ask the questions instead of answering the questions 24/7, 365. So that's one guest down. Next tour, we go up to the Pacific Northwest and catch up with our friend Nico Moreno from Pulso Sports and from Sounder at Heart. The name Pedro de la Vega has come up a couple of times in this week. One, because of a massive goal that was a part of an outburst that Seattle had in League's Cup play. And the other, because Pedro de la Vega might be of interest to Atlanta United. So we catch up with our buddy Nico Moreno and find out about League's Cup, Seattle, Pedro de la Vega, and possible dominoes. And he's in his new studio space. He's styling and profiling on, like, Washington Sports Weekly. He's kicking back with... I think it was Aaron Majoski on Q13. We got to find out about the visit. We got to find out about the TV. We got to find out about some folks that he dropped info bombs about on the show kind of last week, and then he said more in Seattle. Check out the studio space of our buddy Nico Moreno. How are you, sir?
Hey, what's going on? How am I coming on?
Crystal clear and awesome. How about that?
Love it, my friend. Just making sure I had some technical difficulties, but I'm here. Second cup of coffee. We are ready to go. I should have closed those blinds.
you want to close them? You can.
Yeah. Can you take me off real quick? And I will go ahead and.
No, we're going to see you close the blinds. We ain't taking.
All right. Hold on.
Just go. Doesn't matter to us. See, now this is the thing. Okay. So there we go. See, he's gradually getting the studio squared away. He's closed the blinds. Okay. The glare has disappeared. The glare is gone. That's good.
Sorry about that there, boss. That is what I wanted to do.
No, it's all the glare has disappeared. The studio space is taking shape for Nico Moreno. That's what matters.
Still trying to get used to it. You could definitely see that.
It's all good. Glad that you're creating the home away from home. So after our segment last week, you go on, was it Washington Sports Weekly? Is that WSW? Is that it?
Yes, Washington Sports Rep on Fox 13.
Got it. So was that Aaron that was with you on Q13, or who was that with you?
No, that is Alicia. Alicia Smith. She just got married. But she is fantastic. She's the main host of Washington Sports Rep, her and Aaron Levine. They bring me on, especially after the Club World Cup. We've been doing a lot more things together, and we had a nice little talk about some information that kind of came my way. And a lot of it was tied up to the Atlanta game, so it kind of fell right to bring it on that day.
All right, so since you mentioned PDLV. And you mentioned the full-length version of that. You mentioned Pedro de la Vega, one of two teams interested in possibly acquiring said individual was Atlanta United, and understandably so, that there would be kicking of tires considering past relationships with the two franchises and such. Any updates one way or the other? Is interest still there? Are folks still in the lot looking at the car, kicking tires? What's going on?
Yes, look, interest is still there. And, I know that there's been a lot of media members from Atlanta that have basically said it's not a thing. But obviously, I get information that is more than reliable. And I know that is difficult to fathom because clearly Pedro La Vega being a DP makes it a intricate move, but it doesn't make it impossible. There's a lot of ways that Atlanta can move one of the DPs. There's, you know, I had heard there was interest for Alex Marinchuk as much as, you know, to move him from Atlanta. There's interest on the player. He's been playing lights out ever since that Pedro La Vega thing that we kind of talked about. Obviously, the 2-2 draw shot and then him getting on the scoreboard here on Leagues Cup as well. But, you know, there's just a lot of ways that Seattle could make room for Pedro La Vega. And look, we talked to Felipe Cardenas and him. Both him and I agreed on there's a huge glaring need for Atlanta United to get a winger. That is something that right now the team offensively, all the width usually over the last couple of seasons has come from the fullback, the wingbacks. You know, sometimes it's been Saba time playing that winger position. It's Amador. Sometimes it's Ronald Hernandez, which is not what you necessarily want as Atlanta United. Obviously, Amaron is more of a pocket winger, and he comes in those inside channels. So there is a need for a true winger in Atlanta. And knowing that Chris Henderson had scouted and understood and knew about Pedro de la Vega, and at the time when, because the inquiries for Pedro de la Vega started before the Club World Cup, that was a time where Pedro kind of felt like a surplus here in the Sounders. He wasn't getting a lot of play time. He doesn't even start all the games in Club World Cup. So Chris Henderson, being the astute and brilliant GM that he is, he probably thought that he could get Pedro de la Vega on the low, on the cheap, on a discount. And that's why those whole things kind of came about. But we'll see where it goes. Obviously, Pedro has continued to do very well ever since that time as well. I still feel like in Brian Smetzer's eyes, I don't know if he's undependable, and you know, he just needs to have him on the field at all times. So does that lead to, you know, some movement thereafter? It could be the possibility. I think he should stay in Seattle. I think that Seattle should keep him. Seattle at this time doesn't have a real game breaker, and that's what Pedro de la Vega is. In form, Pedro de la Vega is a true game breaker, a guy that's going to break a scheme, a guy that's going to put the team on his back, a guy that's going to be excited, that's going to put butts in seats. That banger he had against San Jose had Lumen exploding in a way that I haven't seen in, or heard in a very long time. So those are the things that Pedro provides, and I don't know if Seattle can afford to lose him, to be quite frank.
Right now, Pedro de la Vega under contract through 27 with an option year of 28. And the numbers of GAM, and this is at the end of February, early March, GAM on the table, Seattle going into, and this is taking out tinkering and things like that in between the end of February and now, heading into March, had just over $1,100,000 available in GAM. There have been a couple of deals that Chris Henderson has made where he has acquired some GAM to help things out, where you can buy down players in situations like that. But both clubs, Atlanta and Seattle, are on the 3-3 model, where your DPs and your U22s are 3-3s. And Atlanta United right now has open U22 slots. The only U22 slot that had been used was Edwin Mosqueda, who is now down at Millonarios. So your U22 slots are wide open for you to pull any kind of a deal. I think Leo Afonso may end up going into that one of those U22 slots after having been picked up by Messi and friends to add to that. For Seattle, like I said, and I'm just staring at the numbers that came out at the beginning of March, PDV a designated player, and Seattle doesn't have any U22s on the books right now either. So they can opt to go 2-4 if they want to, because of everything that comes up through Tacoma. It would be an interesting roster construction for Seattle if Pedro de la Vega ends up going somewhere, because then you have that option of going 2-4, or you can stay at 3-3 and figure out how you want to do things financially.
Yeah, and I think that's it's all on the table for Seattle if that was to be the case, right? They have clearly are very close to bringing Noah Ohio. Obviously, a U22 striker that would take one of those spots. The clear and obvious move with Obed Vargas is that he's going to get a contract extension and he's going to take one of those U22 spots. That would still leave you with one or two. I have been more than vocal and I've reported multiple times that Seattle at this time is not a team looking for or to spend a lot on players. So going out there and getting another DP, if let's say Pedro was to go, I don't necessarily know how liable or how, you know, how feasible that really is right now. So maybe the four U22s would be interesting if they go for another U22. But obviously, we're just speculating here. I'm not saying that's what's going on. But to your point, yes, considering the way the Seattle has been trending in the market and looking for more deals and not necessarily going out there to spend a bunch of money, you know, something like that could definitely be a possibility.
Supplementals right now for Seattle: Cody Baker under contract through 26, two option years after that. Reed Baker Whiting, the last year of his homegrown deal.
Yes.
Jacob Castro has a contract through this year with an option for next. Stuart Hawkins through 26, options for 27 and 28. Paul Rothrock is at the end of his deal at the end of this season. Travion Sosa through this year with two more options after that. And then you mentioned Obed Vargas, contract through 25, heading to 26. So there are some decisions to be made when it comes to those homegrowns and where they could slot in the future.
Absolutely. And look, Reed Baker Whiting is one that you're still trying to figure out who he is, what he could provide. There's been a ton of interest in the player in the past from Eredivisie teams. There's been interest from him from German teams, but he's had a hard time staying healthy and taking the workload, even as late as just recently with all of the controversy that surrounded Nuhu. You kind of thought that Reed maybe was going to make it difficult for Nuhu to get his spot back, but against Atlanta, he doesn't have a great game. He kind of is the main reason why that first goal happens. He doesn't get the right bounce. He allows, I don't know if it was Almiron or one of the Atlanta players to get on the ball and cross that. And that's what leads to the Lafilat cross that Yamar hits with that own goal. So, you know, some of those things that that Reed hasn't been able to do to solidify his position are still to be seen. So you're going to have to figure out, do you want to extend him? Do you want to just let him go for free? I don't see Seattle doing that sort of business. Yeah. So I'm guessing that they will. So how do you do that? What is that worth? There's a lot of moves that Seattle needs to be pending for the future. I would even say Yemer Gomez Andrade, that I believe he has an option for next year. You know, players don't like options. So he's going to want to get a contract extension. So there's a whole bunch of things that kind of go in line for Seattle. This year is a big year to try to figure out. Obviously, your DP spots at the moment are locked in for a long time. And same thing goes for Ferreira. That is a deal that has some underlying numbers that are possibly going to, you're going to need to figure out. And because I'm sure that he's going to at some point be a DP or structured in that route. So there's just a lot of things that Craig Weibel has been doing. And look, you got to give him credit for all the heat that Craig Weibel and this, you know, scouting has taken because of what people want or, you know, the non-believers of the Ferreira deal and all of these things. They're fourth in the West. And look, if they don't drop points against Charlotte, if they don't drop points against Colorado just recently, if they don't drop points at Atlanta with 2 minutes left, yeah, when you scored that goal by Osase, Seattle is, if not number one, they're close to the top of the West. So I think that the roster has held up. I think that the depth has definitely come out to, you know, reflect that is a talented group. I mean, this team has had no Jordan Morris for a long time, no Yamer for quite some time, no Kim. I mean, you know, there's been a whole bunch of injuries, and yet the team is where they're at. I'm not saying he's been brilliant. I'm not saying he's been consistent. They've had ups and downs this season, but the proof is in the pudding. Fourth place is pretty good for the Western Conference.
Yeah, John Bell, Stephen Fry out of deals, no option years after this. Yamer is on a TAM deal, contract through this year with an option. Same for Kim Ki-hee, a normal contract ending this year, option for 26. Same for Danny Musovski. Same for Nuhu. Same for João Paulo. So there are some roster decisions that have to be made. And for those interested, Pedro de la Vega, according to the MLSPA, is making a very, very manageable $1 million base, guaranteed comp, 1.379. So that's a navigable number for a lot of folks. And we'll see what it looks like with PDV and any future when it comes to his address. As always, great to catch up with our friend Nico Moreno from Sounder at Heart and from Pulso Sports. This is the Best of SDHAM. John Nelson here with you, carrying you through the week of SDHAM, what we learned as a part of our education, and what we were able to pass along to all of you. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Next up, Santiago Lopez, El Farolito. You might know them in nickname as the Burrito Boys from their runs that they have had in the U.S. Open Cup, winning the Stonebreaker Cup, and now chasing after back-to-back titles in the NPSL. And they're doing it with a goose egg on the board in the best way possible. Here's our conversation in SDH 1v1 with Santiago Lopez as he chases after perfection and a back-to-back. Time for a soccer down here 1v1, and it's with somebody who's chasing after a championship, and he gets to do it at home. Earlier in the week, we got to catch up with Carlos Rubio at Hickory FC. Now we go to the flip side and catch up with Santiago Lopez as El Farolito gets to host at historic Kezar Stadium on the weekend. Coach, thanks for dropping by for a 1v1.
Thank you so much for the invite. It's an honor to be here.
So what is it like chasing after a bit of history in the NPSL? What has it been like answering questions like that from folks like me all week long?
No, it's been great. It's NPSL is such a very, it's a very competitive league, very mature league. And at least when you talk about the development of the players, it's a different type of intensity. The week by week preparation really helps out all the players to rest and focus and give their max in every match. So it makes it a very interesting league. And we've been very proud of being that. And thanks to that, the players have, you know, gone used to the intensity, the maturity of the competition, and that rolls over into the Open Cup. So we're very grateful to be part of this league. And you know, some teams have left, some new teams like Hickory come in, and they're chasing a championship. So you just never know who you're going to play against.
This is not something that has just kind of happened. I mean, you mentioned it with the Open Cup. This has been 8 months worth of El Farolito really making an impact in the scene here in the U.S. I mean, all you have to do is go back to look at Open Cup, you look at Steinbrecher. I mean, this has been a full 8 months for this squad. What has it been like going through all of these different markers this year there at El Farolito?
It's a great learning experience for me to manage the you know, the players' loads, the fatigue factor, the roster switches. So in the beginning of the season, we really, as a coaching staff, we really did focus on different strategies and formations, get more players to give some rest to the ones that we thought were going to be playing the Open Cup and obviously the Steinbrecher Cup. So we've been very fortunate to have such a great professional group of players that are super committed. They've been working very hard and want to, you know, take that extra step in their development and be a starter in the team and the ones who are starters to maintain it as well. So it's been challenging, but it's such a great learning experience and just overall very fortunate that I come with a group that is very united and they're not selfish in the field.
Because I mean, this is, you have a large roster to pick from, but I would imagine with all of the hurdles about real world and all these other kinds of demands, it has, you mentioned how it's been a great learning experience for you. What are some of those lessons, I guess, coming off of a championship last year in the NPSL with this eight month run that has been going on here in 25? What are some of the things that have stuck with you that you've kind of put in your hip pocket as lessons that you've learned along the way?
To me, it's been overall the training method. You need to keep a high intensity and very well ordered strategy in how you're going to train your players and what type of habits you want for them to present at the field. The game of soccer, it's, you just never know what's going to happen. You might have a lot of possession, you might not. There might be conditions like weather factors that you can't play the way you want to. Kezar is a very difficult venue, so there's games where we have the ball more, sometimes we don't. But you have to adapt to the situation and try to get the win, regardless if it's playing really nice or it's not. So the training method is just, it varies of just a lot of different situations. So we've really focused on that to create a very high intensity environment in a very, very small space, because San Francisco, we don't have a lot of fields. We've had to adapt to having 35 players in a half a field, and you have to manage it and you have to work it out and try to get the most you can, because these guys travel an hour away from their home to come and train after 8 hour shifts of working or sitting on an Uber car or mowing a lawn, whatever it would be. So you definitely want to make it very high professional, high intensity, but also very fun for them that they keep wanting to come back. So it's been challenging, but definitely the training method.
And you've come out the other side to this championship game undefeated. How difficult has that been this year?
Well, I really don't like to think about the past, at least when I talk to my players. But my coaching staff just kept on reminding me, like, we had a great year last year, and this year we need to prepare differently. We have to be more aware of certain things. And they were absolutely right. They, without them, we wouldn't be here. And the challenges have been even greater, because all the teams in our region just come at us even more harder. They bring literally at their best that they can available. They bring the great quality. The coaches are very intense, and they want to be the coach that beats us, and the player that wants to stand out to maybe, you know, get called up by us in the future, whatever it might be. But it's just been super difficult, and the level has been super high and demanding, and a great learning experience for the new kids that we've been throwing him in there when that we need to give other players some rest. So it's been extremely competitive, and we're very grateful to, you know, be in this situation. And it's all thanks to the conference that has helped us.
And you've only given up 3 goals this season, if memory serves. I mean, obviously everybody sits there and talks about offense doing one thing, defense wins you championships. Right now, defense is doing it for you, only giving up a handful. Look, I can't even fill out a full hand holding up 3 fingers. I mean, that's what your defense has done this year.
Yeah, it's been a great year just overall from everybody. It's really good how you could you've convinced and just naturally the players have believed in certain things that you need to do to defend well. And it doesn't need to be just a defender. And it goes up to the midfielders all the way to the strikers. So everybody's very linked up, and they know the idea of the game plan, and they know how to execute it. And but in any given day, they might just blank out, and it might not happen. So we try to depend on ourselves as a coaching staff and make the right decision that the player is mentally and physically prepared for the game that we're up against, no matter if it's Open Cup, if it's week one of the NPSL, or a championship game. We need to make the right decisions and give them the best tools and be completely responsible for that.
Are you and the coaching staff surprised at the levels of success and what you've been able to achieve? Or do you have time when the seasons are over to reflect on everything? Do you get the chance to reflect in season at all and sit there and go, man, we've really done some really cool things, even though we're not done? Or do you wait until the season's over, then you sit there and reflect and go, wow, we really did a lot of cool things?
I panic a lot, so I don't trust anything in football. Very fortunate that before NPSL, I was coaching at a very young age, adults at the San Francisco Football League, and it's a long season, March to October, every weekend. So I got to see a lot of things that could happen in the field when it's a high intensity game. So I don't trust the game. A lot of things could happen, but my coaching staff are very, very relaxed. They've always said, oh, we got this. It's going to be fine. but I just can never be so sure of that. So you have to prepare extra and not take things easily and not be overconfident. But during the off season, to be honest, I completely just forget about what happened. I enjoy my time with my family. I take care of the business that we have with my family. On the side, I try to get more preparation by courses and traveling to meet other people and connecting with old teammates of mine. So I'm always involved with the game, but definitely the past is the past, and the champion mentality is always a short memory. So we got to forget that and move on.
Santiago Lopez, head coach of El Farolito, getting ready for the NPSL title game at historic Kezar Stadium. I just have these visions of folks like Hugh McElhinney and the San Francisco 49ers and my old football cards coming with Kezar hosting Hickory FC and El Farolito this weekend. So when you have a question, since you don't trust the game and you panic by your own admission, who is on your speed dial outside of the coaching staff? So if you have a question about the game in and of itself, or a game or a opponent or an opponent or anything like that, who's on your speed dial to sit there and use as your reference points to sit there and get advice?
Yeah, well, we have Marcos Da Silva. He's my assistant coach. And then our goalkeeper coach is Douglas Donizete, both professional, ex-professional players in Brazil. And Marcos, I coached Marcos. He's older than me, but I coached him my first 2 years with the club 15 years ago. And I invited him because he knows the culture of the team. He was part of it. He played for the San Francisco League team and also the over 35 team. He's won championships with the team. So he knows the culture and the responsibility that we have with our mission community district here. So he knows the history, and Douglas is a fantastic goalkeeper coach. He's new, he's getting his credentials and certifications in Brazil and here in the US. So whenever they see something, they let me know. But I normally take on the responsibility of the performance analysis and the scouting and all of that. So it's a team. Everybody does their own part, but during the game, whatever they see, they're very confident and talk to me because I'm always very open, and I need them to keep talking to me and reminding me of certain things that we need to be looking at. But just overall, how just managing the flow and the story of the game.
What's it like for El Farolito to no longer be a secret when it comes to the United States and the whole soccer culture, because of what you have been able to accomplish through all of that hard work, through the dedication of the players, through the players that once they come in, they want to stay? What's it like not being a secret and knowing that regardless of competition, everybody now knows who you are and you've got that bullseye on you each and every time out?
Yeah, there's good and bad things about it. And I would definitely want to start with the positive. And the positive is that more players want to be involved around the area. There's people that want to be in the team. They want to come and try out. There's no official tryouts. There's nothing open. I go out and look for these players, or a friend of a friend tells me and recommends me. They come into training. Some of the players even recommend their friends, and it's become a just word of mouth community and just very close and tight family. And that's really, really good because, you know, everybody understands the culture of the training, what they're up against in the games, the responsibilities and the discipline that you need to be in this team, because it's not just teaching them how to play as a team. They know how to play soccer, but they need to know how to play as a team and just overall teach them good values. You know, even as adult, you forget things that are bad and good in life. So you have to constantly remind them, hey, you did wrong in doing this, and you gave us your word, and you didn't show up to practice. Like that, they already know the environment and the and how we like to work with these players. So with this whole hype, a lot of players are more interested, and a lot of good quality players are going to be hopefully showing up, and that creates a very more competitive environment for the ones that are already here and they think they're a starter. So that will hopefully bring more quality to the team, and we would have to prepare more as a coaching staff and individually give, you know, players the right tools to overcome these professional teams in the future if we qualify to the Open Cup. And obviously there's no surprise, so we have to step up even more our game.
And you're doing this while running a business, being a father, and it is a youngin. It is not, you know, there's a lot of different plates that you're having to spin right now. Have you postponed sleep and rest until like 2029 or something like that? How are you juggling all of these things?
No, yeah, I'm very, very grateful that my family supports me. My wife allows me to be away from home more than 12 hours a day. I miss my family, my kids. My daughter, she's 4 months old, so she wakes up at 3, 5, 7 in the morning. So one cup of coffee is the limit for sure a day. And you have to be very careful when you take it. So I just know that this is temporary. That season is going to be over this Saturday. I could confirm that. Before, I didn't know when. I'm very grateful, and I have a lot of energy, and I love the game. I've been learning so much in the human connection and the strategy, and really feeling the momentum of certain things when something starts and how it ends. It's really beautiful to experience that a season, a game, a week, a day, whatever it is. It's really nice for me to experience these type of things, if it's football or whatever it is. So I'm very grateful that right now I'm still very healthy and I could keep up going, and I don't want to stop. And now I'm coaching MLS Next Academy, 16, 17, 19 year olds. And that adds a different mentality, and it's another headache.
Cause you get time with the town too. Yes. I mean, so does that cup of coffee, is that a static time every day, or do you budget it out with the energy levels and sit there and it's like, yeah, I know it's one cup of coffee, I know that's it. Is it that one locked in time, or does it vary during the day?
It definitely has to be before 4 p.m.
Okay.
Because if it's after 4, you have problems going to sleep at midnight.
Understood. Yeah. No doubt about that. What has study hall been like getting ready for Hickory? Because they like to put the ball in the back of the net. Carlos and their group, they pride themselves on their offense. And I know that you pride yourself on your defense among the entire package. What has study hall been like getting ready for this one?
Yeah, I haven't seen such a consistent and well-balanced NPSL team in a long time. I remember seeing Motown last season, and they were a powerhouse through many years, and they had a really good core of players, and you would see maybe one or two weaknesses, maybe. But with this NPSL Hickory team, I see it completely just powerful. And the attacking side and the defensive side, you have their attackers who have great ability with the ball, but these guys have heart and passion in the game, the ones that every coach will love to have, the ones that are just diving in, sliding when they lose a ball. They recover fast when they lose a ball. They know how to counter very fast. You have a defensive line that talks and organizes. They seem to have a lot of experience. And you have a goalkeeper that is not afraid in any situation. So overall, it's a fantastic team. But we're going to find their weaknesses, and we have to take advantage of that. And the game is going to give us those clues, because every game is different. Their film shows something, but once they step into the field and they're up against an opponent that really wants the championship and is going to also dive, and they're going to be as passionate as they are, things could definitely change.
No doubt about it. It is the last game of the year in the 2025 season for the NPSL at historic Kezar Stadium. And just go, because it's 8 o'clock Eastern time, 5 o'clock Pacific, and literally you can walk in the door. Free entry. You get to hang out at Kezar. You get to watch some quality soccer with El Fadalito hosting Hickory FC. As always, Coach, great to see you. As you're chasing after history again in the NPSL, be safe, be healthy. We will catch up with you soon. And it's great to see what you're doing out there on a bunch of different fronts with El Fadalito as the base. Thanks for dropping by for a 1v1.
Thank you so much. It's definitely an honor to be here.
Once again, reminder, 8 o'clock Saturday night on YouTube. You can watch it for free from historic Kezar Stadium in San Francisco. El Farolito, Hickory FC. And we also caught up with Carlos Rubio, the NPSL Coach of the Year. You can catch that conversation as well on our podcatchers and all of our ways that you can digest all of our audio content at the SDH Network. Thanks again, once again, to Santiago Lopez and our friends at El Farolito, Nico Moreno from Pulso Sports and Sounder at Heart, and Gio Savarese from MLS and from Apple TV Plus, as he is a pundit this year, breaking down the game from an entirely different perspective, and we are greater for it. That is another round of SDH AM. Thanks for hanging out with us every single week, every single day on the SDH Network. Could not do it without you. Thanks for being a part of our family as we let you know what's going on in the world of soccer 24/7. 365. Mucha plata, y'all. Play it safe. Enjoy your weekend. Very, very busy weekend. We'll catch up with you again next week.